Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we talk about another one of the great wineries here in Jessamine County. Today, Chrisman Mill Vineyards will be our topic of discussion. We'll talk to owners Chris and Denise Nelson right after this word from one of our great sponsors here on Jess FM.
The three words all women love to say, you shouldn't have. Sometimes the best reason to give her beautiful flowers is no reason at all. I'm Rachel Wolf from Rachel's Rose Garden in Wilmore. Let me help you make ordinary moments extraordinary with a Just Because bouquet from Rachel's Rose Garden. We have gorgeous fresh flowers and an assortment of cute gifts guaranteed to make her day. Rachel's Rose Garden is conveniently located on Main Street in Wilmore. Call today at 859-858-9415.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday as we continue to learn more about people, places, and things of our county. Today we're going to travel down Chrisman Mill Road and we're going to stop at a place that has done very well since its opening. It's called Chrisman Mill Vineyards and Winery. And with us are owners Chris and Denise Nelson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you guys here, and as we learn a little bit more about what goes on down at Chrisman Mill. Now, this vineyard, this winery that you have there, wasn't just something that popped up overnight. There's a lot of history down in that area of the country, and especially with Jessamine County, and especially with wineries. You know, when most people think about vineyards, the first thing I think that comes to their mind is either California or France, probably. Mm-hmm. Not many people think Jessamine County, Kentucky. Well, at least they used not to. They probably do now because there's such a history of how the vineyards got started here commercially and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's a lot of history in your all's too, right, Chris? Chrisman Mill.
There is. And just briefly to requote the history of Jessamine County and vineyards, a gentleman named Jean-Jacques Dufour came over here in 1798. Mm-hmm. In fact, he came his first trip in 1796, and he traveled around the eastern U.S. looking for a place to establish a vineyard and a winery. He'd been sent by his father, and he had multiple siblings, and the goal was to set up something here very much like where they came from in Vevey, Switzerland, where they were growing grapes and making wine, to do it in the New World, which was an exciting new place for them back then. And so he traveled around the eastern U.S., and in 1799, he planted vines right here in Jessamine County. Mm-hmm. He named it First Vineyard, mm-hmm. and actually Tom Bell now has found the site, has First Vineyard Winery there now on the actual site, which is an incredible visit for people if they want to see that history. Tom's a phenomenal guy. He's put all that back together again.
Yeah.
But that was, it was the first vineyard in the United States established explicitly for the commercial production of commercial quantities mm-hmm. of wine. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's legend that's disputed whether it was real or not, but actually a barrel of wine was actually taken by either donkey or horse out to Thomas Jefferson, who tasted it and thought that it was pretty good. So it ties into the winemaking history of the eastern U.S. for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what about Chrisman Mill, though? I guess once it was established down at the very end, where you're talking about, where Tom's place is, other people decided, well, if they can do it down there, I'll do it up here? Or how did that come about?
Yeah, and I've been told through voice history that there were other vineyards in Jessamine County as well. In mm-hmm. fact, there's a little road over over on the bypass called Vineyard mm-hmm. Road. And I think I've been told there was a German family there that had a vineyard. So I'm sure there were others, and I think there's probably some people in this county that know some of that verbal history and better than I. When we moved here in 1996, we really didn't even know the history of First Vineyard, ironically. I mean, we had no idea that mm-hmm. that was out there. I hadn't read it anywhere, and I had no idea. We just wanted a place in the country that was beautiful and to have a few vines initially. We weren't even really thinking about having a winery, just wanted to have a beautiful place in the country. We found our property in the fall of 96 and planted the first vines in 97, and we were off and running. And then I started to come across the history. People mm-hmm. would say something, or I'd read something, and then the internet was becoming searchable and much more easy to find things on the internet at that point. And we started finding some of the history of Jean-Jacques Dufour.
Well, your story sounds a lot like Tom's. I mean, he had that place down there, but I think he told me he was going to have a place where you could four-wheel or ride horses or something. I mean, no idea of getting in the wine business. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys, though, you didn't really think about the business, but you were finding a place to plant some vines, correct?
We were.
For your own personal use, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah,
I make small quantities of wine.
Yeah.
And maybe an inkling of thinking of doing it commercially. I'd made wine at home for many years before that, so that was a thought. And Tom's history, you're right, is very similar. He wanted a beach on the river, is what he told me.
Yeah.
And he would go up and down the river, and he found a beach, and then he found the property owner and kept bugging the lady until she finally offered to sell it to him. And then he realized what he had.
So once you all bought the place and you moved out there, did you live there?
We do. We live on the property.
You live there, and you've planted your vines. It's once you found this history, is that when you said, well, wait a minute, maybe we need to get a little bit further into this? How did that happen?
No, we were pretty well into it when the history started to become apparent to us. And actually, there was a group from Europe that found us. They were writing, Jean-Jacques Dufour wrote The American Vine Dresser's Guide. It was the first viticultural textbook published in the U.S. And there was a group in Europe that was translating that into, I believe, into French. And they found us online, the winery, the website, and they came over and took photos that they actually included in their book from
France. Really?
Yeah. So there's a picture of our vineyard. I can tell you it was way back because the vines were very young when I look at the picture, and we used to hang scare eye balloons over the vineyard to try to keep the birds away. And I look back and think how silly that was, and it's an ugly picture of the vineyard. But yeah, they included us in the book, and they're a big, big Jean-Jacques Dufour Historical Society over there. So it was very cool that we connected even with the European roots, you know, 200-something years later.
How big is your place?
We have 10 acres total. Yeah. Of that, about 3.5 acres is planted to vine. And I've pretty much planted everything there that you can do. I think the only crop on that property was tobacco on the back part, and I'm sure it didn't do very well because we have a very thin, heavy clay soil with a huge amount of limestone flagstones in it. It's a very difficult property to work. If you start penetrating the surface with an auger or a subsoiler, you very quickly break equipment. So it's been very difficult to get vines and posts in the ground to even stay upright.
But evidently, once they're in, they do well.
Oh, they love the soil and the aspect of the soil, too. We face west, and we have Hickman Creek Valley, which forms a beautiful valley. So cold air drains down in the spring and pushes warm air uphill to us, so we get less spring frost injury. We're up where we get a constant breeze, even down in the valley down below. Down at the bottom of our vineyard is much different than the top of our vineyard, where we constantly have a breeze. And that helps prevent mold and mildew growing on the vines. And any tobacco grower is familiar with all of that.
I want to switch gears here just a moment, because at some point in time, you guys had to get an interest in this. Denise, I'm going to switch to you. First off, I want you to tell me a little bit of background about you two personally. Okay. Where did you come from to come here, and what were you involved in before this became a thing?
Okay. Well, we met on a blind date, and we had a mutual friend that put us together in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And we married in Houston, Texas, and
actually married again.
Then, well, Galveston, that's true. Okay, just a short poem down. But then after that, Chris actually was in the middle of a fellowship, and I'm a licensed architect in Texas, but I had NCARB, so I could go pretty much anywhere and get licensed, except for California, of course. And at that point, he was looking for a permanent position in infectious disease and pediatrics. And unfortunately, when you get so specialized, you're very, very limited on where you can go.
Right.
I think there were three places, and I remember like Mississippi and a couple other places, but Lexington was one of the three that he could actually get a position. And again, mine was flexible. So we decided, okay, let's try it. And he actually got offered the position, and off we were running. But to back up, part of our wedding, we made our own wine, our own wedding wine for our friends. And so that was kind of the start of our hobby started there. And once you start a hobby, and if you keep going, you get better and better, and you want better quality of things. So we knew that at that point we were just buying canned juice or something, and it was like, okay, let's step it up. So when we did buy the property, we got here and we were like, well, let's try it again. And when you can control the input of it, like growing your own grapes, you can control the output. And if you start with bad grapes, you're not going to make good wine. It just it doesn't go hand in hand. So we knew that we had to, if we wanted to play with it, and actually we just played with it. We put 330 vines in the ground the first year, and just thought, okay, let's try it. And we had friends of, I'm trying to remember, Sandy and Steve at Madison Vineyard.
Yeah, we had befriended some vineyards in Indiana and Ohio, particularly a couple named Steve and Sandy Palmer at Madison Vineyards in Madison, Indiana. We traveled around quite a bit to find out who was making good wine, and Steve at the time and still is making really good wine. So we befriended them, and that's how we got to know
them.
And
we'd go up there every weekend and work their vineyard and help them bottle.
Yeah,
and
and learn the business up there.
Yeah, it was really cool. That's what we kind of
But when you came to Kentucky, this was nowhere.
Oh, gosh, no.
Probably... If somebody had told you that's what's going to happen, you've lost your mind.
Basically, we knew we wanted to make some wine. We were just making it for ourselves, and you can make up to 200 gallons per family, you get to 201.
Is that law?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You get to 201, you have to get a federal license.
Oh.
So we knew we could make up to 200 gallons. So we actually went in on juice with Steve and from Madison Vineyard, and we trucked down the fresh juice and just thinking, okay, let's just play with it. And that's, again, we were just home winemakers just playing. We made 200 gallons. We made our Sweet Jasmine Rose was our first one, and Vidal Blanc. And we looked at it and we went, holy crap, we can't drink all this.
He has a lot of 200 gallons.
We didn't really realize how much wine that was. And so we went, well, I guess we've got to get a license. We basically rolled out and then got our federal license and put that on the market and got it into Liquor Barn. And Liquor Barn was not into small farm wineries in Kentucky at that point. They were not, they didn't have any, basically.
But now, so, if you don't have it, you're sunk, right?
Yeah, I mean,
that's a big thing now, right?
Yeah, they've been very supportive over the years, and we appreciate that support.
Yeah.
So basically, we put it in the store. We got it in the store, and all of our friends and everything, it was sold out within like 3 days.
How many different ones do you all make now?
I think at one time we actually scaled back, and then we scaled back up. I think we have about 13 or 14 different wines now that we make. We try to, you know, reasonably limit that, you know, because it's a lot to do with a full-time job.
But some are made from, like, honey, and some are aged for, like, 3 years. And, you know, so they have all different timelines and time life spans and blackberry. And
well, the ones that are particularly grape, are there... Is there a different grape for every type, or is it the same grape that's worked? How does that work? I don't know how it works.
Well, many of the grapes are very versatile. You can make different styles of wine from the same grape. So you can make a dry or a sweet or a semi-sweet wine, particularly Vidal. That's one of our base white wine grapes. It's very similar, some people feel, to Riesling, and Riesling's very versatile as well. So we can do a dry white wine with our Vidal. We can do a semi-sweet wine, which we do. And you can even do, we do our blush. Our Sweet Jasmine Rose is about 80% Vidal. And then that same grape can be made into a very sweet dessert wine, which we make a very special late harvest dessert wine from our grapes on our own property. So there's four wines right there from one grape variety.
Yeah.
And the reds are similar. You can do the same thing with Chambersin and Chancellor and Bacco and things like that.
One thing I wanted to ask before I got too far away from history, was there anything You mentioned Tom earlier. He found out that property was where, is it DeFour?
Yeah.
Was there anything special about your property that you found out? That was it a winery at one time? Is it just
east and west?
Well, as far back as I know, the history of our property, there was the Browning farm, and then it was divided up. The Goldies bought it. Jim and Joe T. Goldie bought it, and also their brother Gene.
Gene, who was sheriff.
The three Goldie brothers. Yeah, he was a sheriff.
Used to be sheriff here.
Yeah, so Gene and T. lived down the hill from us in the old farmhouse. And then Jim Goldie owned the back property.
Yeah.
We bought that separately from Jim. But they got us, they were, as far as I know, that's as far back as I know the history of the farm. I was told there was tobacco on the back, but when we purchased it, it was basically 100-year-old growth cedar trees, fescue as high as your chest, and cattle. The day we walked up, we called the realtor, and he said, go on up there and check it out. Go up the top of the hill and look back. You'll see the view. And so we're literally shooing cows away and walking through chest-high fescue and curving around giant cedar trees. And we get up to the top and look back and we said, this is it.
This is it.
We were very lucky to find it.
You mentioned the Chrisman Mill has been mentioned, and you mentioned earlier before we started Union Mill. And there was mill. You talk about something there was all over this county. There was mills. And it's evident by the many names in our county that has the word mill in it. Chrisman Mill was a happening place outside of wine.
And I actually had the good fortune to meet Mr. Clay Watts, who's recently passed away in the past decade, but he and I sat down for about 2 hours, and he was the last person to operate Chrisman Mill before it was
the actual mill. Yes.
Yeah. And that mill ran continuously. It was Hunter's Mill initially. Way back, Jacob Hunter was a Revolutionary War person who got property. He partially purchased a 700-something acre corridor up and down Hickman Creek. And he actually constructed Chrisman Mill initially on Hickman Creek there. And then it was named for I think it was Hugh Chrisman who bought it from him. And I have the history on our website of the mill. But I got to sit down with Clay before he passed away, and and got a beautiful inside history of the mill and how his father used to sell bathing suits to people who would come down and swim in the mill pond.
Wow.
Yeah, and they would come from all around Ohio and Indiana, he told me, in the summer to swim in the mill pond there.
Yeah.
And then another cool historical fact that he told me, which at that time I thought, well, that's kind of neat, but it doesn't really mean anything to me, was that his dad and he would sell corn to moonshiners in Jessamine County.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people probably don't know that there was moonshine going on. A lot of people probably do. But we have since found that there were a lot of distilleries in Jessamine County. There was a large concentration of them around the Union Mill area.
Right. That's where I live, is the Union Mill.
17. And, of course, you want to concentrate around the mill.
Right, right.
Because you've got the mill to mill your grain right there.
Right.
But there probably were some in the Crispin Mill area. We're still digging into that history. And then there was a fairly successful distillery right down on the river near where the 27 Bridge goes across there at Boone's Knoll.
Right.
That was actually in operation and bought out by one of the big, I think it was Seagram's maybe, and closed operation.
Canada Dry was down in there too.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Years ago. Yeah.
I think they shut down in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
As we were talking earlier, there was a beautiful stone building there that I wish was still there. There's photos of it. It was just a gorgeous building.
Yes.
It's all gone now. But there was a distillery there until the 70s. And so that history is here as well as the winery history. It's really cool.
You got these grapes growing, and you've got wine started, and you've finally decided, I guess, we need to go in the business. You said you started with Sweet Jessamine Rose and something
and
else.
Petit Blanc, yeah.
But this thing just kept growing and growing and growing. You've got more down there than just growing grapes and making wine. You've got a pretty good outfit down there because people, we get in more of the present day now, where they can eat, where they can have weddings. Tell us about whichever want to do this. Tell us about what all you've got there on the property available.
Well, as we started to really kind of grow the business, people would come out to the tasting room and still do say, what a beautiful site this is. We were very blessed with finding that property. And we started looking at other ways to kind of bring people onto the property and grow the business. And so one of the lucrative things for vineyards and wineries is because they are a beautiful site, people want to have a wedding and a reception there.
Mm-hmm.
And for about 12 years, we did weddings and receptions. We just stopped about 2 years ago.
Oh, did you?
We did. It was a fun run. But anyone who's listening to this, who does this or plans weddings or has had one, knows it's an extremely stressful venture.
Sure.
And it just got to the point where Denise and I were getting to the point where we were so spending so much time on those and planning those, and we had weddings almost every weekend for many years, for a decade.
Well, you've got a winery to run.
We did, and that got in the way of running the business and making good wine. So we had to scale back, and so we still do special private events, and it's a beautiful spot. Scaled down to smaller than 250 person events, but we do up to 40 to 60 people comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And do receptions and retirement parties and things like that. But we still have the commercial kitchen there. Denise can do anything in the kitchen, really. One of the things she's becoming known for and really we're putting out is her bread pudding.
Oh, yeah?
Which is delicious, yeah.
So you still serve lunches out there?
We are actually just gearing back up for that because we kind of, after we stopped doing the wedding several years ago, we kind of closed it down to the public and just kept our retail site off the site, retail store, going. But now we are open again, and we are doing some kind of upscale, more tapas right now, but kind of feeling out the lunches and what we can do. And I'm looking definitely to do that in the future to get more people out there because it's so far out. They need food.
Well, that's right. Now, you're talking about being stressed with the weddings and on the work that goes into it and the winery. I mean, you've got I don't know if you still do, some other things going on, other locations. It's not just limited to Crispin Mill. I mean, you've been in, Lexington and anywhere else?
We did, actually, and we just closed that down like 2 months ago. And so really I'm focusing on the vineyard now.
Okay.
But we've always had an off-site retail location.
Yeah.
And retail, if anybody knows the business, it's changed. I mean, it is drastically changed. So you've got to give them more of a tour and everything else. And we couldn't do that in our retail location. So this is going to work out better. We're kind of just shifting gears and going back to our roots.
One thing I have to ask you about, and I think that people recognize your wine by one reason, And that's the artwork on the labels. Where does that come from? Who does all? Is it one person does it all?
That's my father's original artwork.
Really?
He's 92 and lives in the Black Hills of Wyoming. And he actually designed the 3D M&M man with the little arms and legs when I was like 7 years old. I
really?
Remember on his drafting table. And he got paid like $500 for that. I'd be a multi-billionaire.
Oh,
if he only knew where that would have gone.
Oh,
you know?
But isn't that the way it usually works?
He designed
I read somewhere that somebody, some student, designed the Nike swoosh and got like
$50
$50 and
I heard he went back and sued him, but my dad's like, you know, I'm too old for this. And I'm like, but what about your family? No,
that's
he doesn't
wild.
Have to do with that.
But those drawings he does, the artwork, and it is, the bottles are works of art. I mean, just the label themselves.
He's had three strokes since. He still actually paints, but his paintings are a little bit different. He kind of starts with an eyeball and forgets the rest of the face now. So he's kind of going through the Picasso stage, I think.
But if you look at him, and I've noticed them because, you know, I've seen them. You all have been very nice at some of the, especially some of the silent auctions we've had in our community. I've seen your baskets and stuff. And if you look at those labels, and the one that comes to mind is Sweet Jessamine Rose. Is it?
The woman's
it's,
bird.
And it's, I guess he drew it to the wine?
No, actually, no.
Because that's the way it, that to me, as an outsider, I'm like, they have named this and somebody's drawn that to fit it. He had already done that.
No, he had already done that. That was his forte was doing the Southwest arts and the natural, the nature and
that's amazing.
And the falcon on there, that wasn't one of them, but he actually did one that we released out. We work with a lot of nonprofits and wild bird of prey.
Yeah.
We were working with Kentucky Avian Wild Bird Prey, and we released a falcon right out there.
Oh, yeah.
So he flies around all the time.
Well, one of the other pictures that I have seen, the pictures of your wine, has had these medals hanging on them. You all have been very successful in winning several awards, haven't you?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, we have. We when we first got started, especially the first probably 5 or 6 years, it's important to let people know if your wine is, you know, worthy of award. And so we entered a lot of competitions. As you go through the years, it becomes less important as a marketing tool, but we still do enter competitions and we still do well. It's important, especially if I release a new wine or something new that I'm playing with new flavors, I want to know that it's, you know, that it's not only meeting critical criteria by judges, but also that the public likes it, of course. And so it's nice to know that and have those awards and display those. And there are several really prestigious wine competitions across the United States each year. And fortunately, they don't just accept California wine. You know, they accept wine actually from around the world. They have international categories, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, they put us in the proper category against other variety. Like if it's a Vidal, they'll put you in with Vidal. They're not going to put you in with Chardonnay or something else. It's very fairly done. But, yeah, we have won awards and been very successful, and I'm very proud of that. And again, that goes back to probably – you know, making wine from college onward, you know, just having done it for a long time, you kind of learn how to run a fermentation and do it right.
Is there a reason that you got into it to start with?
You did.
People have asked me that, and it first came with an interest in just enjoying wine and drinking wine and reading about where it comes from and how it's grown. And the formative time in my life for me was my senior year in medical school. My parents asked me what I wanted for graduation, and all my buddies were getting, you know, sports cars and stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm not a materialistic person. I told my family I'd like to go out to Napa Valley. I'd been enjoying wine for a few years at that point. I'd like to see how this stuff is made because I've read about it, but I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
So we lived in Texas at the time. I grew up south of Houston, and so the only taker I could get on it was my mom. So my mom and I drove out all the way from Texas to Napa, Sonoma, and we spent a week tasting room hopping in Napa and Sonoma. It was a very special trip for me because I got to know my mom better as an adult, you know.
Sure.
But also because we were there at a time of the year where the grapes were really beautiful and being harvested, and I got to see the whole process.
Yeah.
And so that really planted a seed for me. I came back and I really got invigorated to make really good wine at that point. For some reason, it just planted a seed. I've always loved growing things. I get that from my mother, and I've always loved green things and just had a green thumb. So I got lucky to have that trip with my mom, and it really started me on a path of wanting to make really good wine.
And of course, nowadays it's an art, but it's a science too.
Absolutely.
It's not, ladies and gentlemen, I don't guess anymore. It's not Lucille Ball stomping around in that big vat. You know, it's federally controlled. There's a lot of things that has to be done correctly to make it right. And I'm assuming that there are things that can go wrong, unfortunately, and you have a whole batch that doesn't work or whatever. So it's a science. I mean, you've got to know.
Absolutely.
the right time, I guess, and the right temperatures and all that kind of stuff to make all this work. What's your most popular that you have, do you think?
Our most popular wines, I think, in the eastern U.S., by and large, if you asked any winery, I think they would tell you that their sweet wines are their breadwinner. That's mm-hmm. what really they sell the most of, and that's the truth at our winery as well. I think, and actually it goes back to the two we've already talked about plus another. So the Vidal, which is our semi-sweet white, and our sweet Jessamine Rose, mm-hmm. partly maybe because it's named for the county, but that's our blush wine, our sweet blush wine. And then the third wine is we call Sweet River Bend Red, and we named it that because Jean-Jacques Dufour's original vineyard is yeah. in the Devil's Bend or Devil's Elbow of the yes. Kentucky River, so that's yeah. why we named it that. And it's a sweet red wine, a blend of different red grapes. Mm-hmm. Those three really form the core of our sales, but we've expanded out to other sweet wines that people enjoy very much. And even as we've gotten more into this and through the years, I think initially people who drink dry red wine are very snobby sometimes about it. You know, I only drink California Cabernet, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But as the years have gone by and the quality's improved overall for eastern U.S. wineries, those people venture into trying local dry red wines as well. And so our barrel-aged reds have always been very good, from First Vineyard Reserve to our Norton and our Norton Reserve. Those have won a lot of medals, but also a lot of acclaim. And we have a very cult following for those people who drink a lot of dry red wine and have big collections, and they love those wines. And they're well done, and if you get the right grape growing for the right grower and they work with it and let the grapes hang and get ripe, you can make really outstanding dry red wines, too.
And for those people listening that might wonder, what's the difference between dry and sweet? It all has to do with your sugar, correct?
That's correct. When we say dry, and a lot of people confuse that, it's not the astringency you feel when you drink the wine, although mm-hmm. that can play in. It's when a winemaker talks about a dry versus a sweet wine, they're saying, what's the residual sugar? Mm-hmm. A sweet wine has residual sugar. That's why it's sweet. A dry wine has been completely fermented out, where the yeast have eaten all the sugar in the wine, and there is no sugar left in that wine. Yeah. It doesn't mean that it doesn't taste fruity or be soft on the palate. And that's where people kind of mix up astringency and sweetness.
Diet wine.
Yeah, that's right.
Will.
That's right. Has no sweetener.
This program just happens, Denise, that today or tonight you all are going to be involved with something festival, right? Why don't you tell us a little about that?
We are. Well, we support several local nonprofits, and one of them is a woman named Jo, and she has a Villager's Hand, and it's a nonprofit. It's actually a real fair trade organization, and she actually goes to 9 different countries, and she sets up sewing centers for these women that are otherwise making bricks for a contractor. She was a CNN reporter for, I believe it was 26 years. I might have that wrong or right, but you probably saw her on CNN. Mm-hmm. She was on the front line. Mm-hmm. So she lives in Berea, and so she's a Kentuckian, and I just bumped into her at an event, and she was selling some of the wares from some of these villagers mm-hmm. That she connects with, and just was like, oh my God, we got to do more than this, because she's just sitting there all day trying to sell something, and she sends 100% of everything she sells, she sends it back to these people.
Wow.
Which is amazing. So what we're doing is we're doing a fundraiser tonight. It's $58. It's online. You can go to chrismamill.com.
It's online?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
You can go online and purchase the tickets.
Oh, and purchase
the
tickets.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Purchase the tickets. And it's right. Actually, we're taking, she has actually now 10 countries that she represents people, these smaller tribes. And so this one will hit Turkey, Indonesia, Ghana, Peru, and Kenya. And one of the things that I did after architecture, I decided to, this business kind of took off, so architecture kind of went a little bit backside for me, and I started picking up doing a lot of culinary things, and so I went to chef school and worked with some chefs in other countries, so food is kind of my forte now. So we're making this all handmade, and it'll be paired with wines from the different areas, and we'll have you kind of walking around the vineyard, and it'll be like a boarding pass that you're mm-hmm. going to get, and there'll be different flights. So if you go online, you'll see that there's different flights, and you just got to sign up for one of the timelines, and that's the time that your group of like 20 people will be leaving our tasting room and walking around the vineyard visiting these different countries.
Okay. So sounds pretty cool, and I was looking at your printed material that you gave me here. What times are available?
I believe the first, we've got 6:15, 6:30. They go every 15 minutes, so it's online. at our website, and I think the first couple of sections are definitely all filled at this point, and I've got the last one is kind of filled, so it's kind of in the middle, so I would say the 7, 7.15, 7.30, and there's all different time slots that you can sign up and buy tickets right there.
Do they get a sampling of all these dishes?
Absolutely.
So just to give you an idea, folks, from Turkey, you're going to have baklava, tangy Turkish salad, I won't say this right. Lamakan Turkish pizza.
Joking, pronounces.
Indonesia, I can say this, sticky rice balls and bakso from Ghana. Looks like West African peanut kebabs, fresh fish cakes, milk tart. Peru, well, I'm glad I can say chicken and dumplings. I know how to say that. Peru, it's a sponge cake. Polo salato, is that that must be a chicken dish.
Uh-huh.
Kenya, soft mini mandazi. Looks like almost like a beignet, it looks like. Ugali beef stew. And then, is that the five?
Yeah, that's
okay. And you pair those with different
wines. So you're going to get a little sampling of the wine, a little sampling of the food, and hopefully we'll have at each station, we'll have somebody talking about that particular country.
Yeah.
Joe will also be doing, we'll be playing some of her CNN reports, her when she was on the field and meeting with these people. And it's called A Villager's Hand is what the money's going toward. The ugali was one that's in Kenya. That's one of her favorites. And when she goes to Kenya, she goes, you have to eat it with your hands and you pick up the potato and then you pick up the meat because they don't have utensils.
Yeah, right.
And so these are very tribal foods, but they're all made fresh. We're making them from scratch.
Cool. And this is happening tonight. And if they want to, just right now, get on your computer and go to chrismanmill.com.
And you can always call us. It's 859-264-9463. It spells out wine.
Okay. Now, future. Well, what's the future for Chrisman Mill Vineyard? You've got a new thing coming along.
We do. We have had some wines that we have had in bulk that we have wanted to, and had a dream to do this for a long time, to turn into spirits.
Mm-hmm.
The first kind of spirit-based wine that I really wanted to do was a port, and I will do my first port this fall.
Mm-hmm.
But wineries have never been allowed to, in Kentucky, have never been allowed to purchase spirits without a special permit that was very difficult to get.
Or
people argued whether it was legal.
Or have other licenses up till January 1st.
Right.
Or never hold another license.
Okay.
I could not hold a brewery license, for instance, or a distillery license.
But that's changed, I guess.
Legislation changed last year, which allowed us this year to hold a distiller's license. And so we don't have any, we're no threat to Maker's Mark for sure. But our goal there was to make either neutral grain spirits or brandy that we could fortify a fermentation of a red grape to make a red port, which is basically a fortified wine. You start a red fermentation, and when it gets to the sweetness level that you want, you add spirits to stop the fermentation, and you have a higher alcohol sweet residual wine, and that's called port. You can age that in barrels and then release it, and it's really delicious. That was my first goal. But it also allows us to make brandy, which is basically distilled wine. You take a finished wine.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you distill it, and you have brandy.
Hmm.
And brandy, if you look at the, aside from bourbon in the United States over the past decade, the fastest growing segment of spirit sales is in brandy, interestingly. So that obviously caught our eye at some point.
And apple brandy was made.
And then brandy has a rich history in Kentucky, in Jessamine County specifically. But, that was the goal, was first to make a port and then maybe a brandy. This also allows me to make whiskey as well, which will be a smaller part of our portfolio potentially. But that was the original goal, was to make something that goes back to our roots as
That's amazing. Well, good luck with that.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
It should. It sounds like a lot of work, too. You may not, because you were talking before the program, and I was, too, about how, we have this job, and then we go to our real job. You may, this is more and more becoming your real job, isn't it?
Well, no. No, I just
you
have
do
less,
all
and less,
this stuff.
Less and less time to do fun things and outside of any of the two.
But that's what it is.
But, you have to be passionate about what you do.
Sure.
My, my job taking care of children each day is a passion, and I enjoy that, and I love it, and I would never not give that up for the other. I love making wine, too, and I always have, and now I get to practice the art of distillation, and that's and making spirits. That's going to be a lot of fun and a new adventure for us. You need to keep it fresh and have a new challenge, I find, to keep things going and keep moving forward, as any business owner knows.
That's right.
Stay static, you're going backwards. So we're trying to keep moving forward and keep doing new things that that bring people in and new genres. Hopefully we could get on the Kentucky Craft Spirits Trail and the Kentucky Bourbon Trail eventually and bring a new group of customers in.
Well, and you know, that's one thing. If you... Around this area, I think, if you talked about wineries in Kentucky, Chrisman Mill just kind of comes to everybody. You've been around long enough that people recognize you. Your wines have sold well. There's a lot of wineries in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in the central Kentucky.
Yeah, there's close to 70 now.
Yeah,
when we were started, we were number
close
five.
Oh, is that
close
right?
Yeah, we were the fifth winery.
But Chrisman Mill, very well known. People know it, and they enjoy it. You've got a lot of activities, especially just like this festival that you're having tonight that you're involved in. But the neat thing about it all is the fact that it happens right here in our county. And we appreciate the fact that you chose our county and found that spot with those cows and fescue to do this. And to be able to have the vision and the good fortune to make it successful. Once again, Denise, let's tell everybody how they can find you, how they can contact you, and find out all about you.
Well, we do have our website, so it's chrismanmill.com. So that's really pretty easy to go to. And on there, it does have a lot of other things. It does have my email, so if you do have a specific question, you are always welcome to email. The one I always kind of hand out, because it's always faithful, is chrismanmill@AOL.com. So I have others, but they don't always work as well as that one, Old Faithful. We are located out in the country. Right now, we are open on Saturdays, every Saturday from 11 to 6. Mm-hmm. So you can just come on out. You can have a tasting. We've got different foods you can have. And we're going to be exploring our lunches. So hopefully, if you haven't seen it online, we will have our lunches. We'll be doing the lunch. Hopefully, we're looking at Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays being open for some lunches out there.
I can take anybody that wants to go across Old Railroad, Logana, Chrisman Mill to your place, but I don't want to do that to people. Instead, we're going to take them down Main Street.
Yep.
People turn left at the courthouse Maple Street. And Maple Street turns into Suffrell Well. How far out is it before you turn to Chrisman Mill?
It's actually a mile and a half out, and you just
to turn left on Chrisman Mill.
Mill.
See, that's what I say. I know all these places growing up here, but I couldn't tell you the mileage.
You know the back roads.
Then once you go Chrisman Mill, how far down Chrisman Mill?
It's just 3 miles.
3 miles down.
Mm-hmm.
You actually will pass that intersection of Logan, and it's right down there on the left. The signs out front.
And the old mill used to be right there after you crossed the creek. So the mill was right there on the right.
By the old big quiet house there.
Yep.
You can't miss that. Appreciate you guys coming in, sharing your story with us. Best of luck in the future and all this new stuff you're getting into. And if you are interested, people, in finding out more about Chrisman Mill and the winery, as again, you can go on that webpage. There's an extensive history written on there to find out about another thing in Jessamine County that drove this economy. It wasn't just tobacco. It wasn't just cows. You know, back in the late 1700s, 1800s, the wineries were a big thing, and then they kind of left, and now they're all coming back, or have in the last 20 years, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks to the Nelsons for coming in today and sharing the history of Chrisman Mill Winery and Vineyards. I appreciate you coming in also. We'll do it again next week at 11 on All Things Jessamine. Don't forget my early morning show. I'm here every weekday morning from 6 until 8 to get you up and going on Jess FM 105.9.